You are listening to Free Radio Olympia. Here at the Thunderbolt, I tend to cover a lot of controversial topics from controversial points of view. And therefore, some of the other folks that work with this radio station always appreciate it when I point out that while they may agree with the views expressed on this program, they also very well may not. And in either case, they are in no way responsible for that content. Therefore, if my show makes you want to start hurling blunt objects at people, then make sure you choose the correct target, which in this case would be me, not them. And now, on with the show. If you want to know what's really going on, as opposed to what the Wall Street media machine wants you to think is going on, then you're in the right place. You are listening to the Thunderbolt on Free Radio Olympia, 91.9 FM in Olympia, Washington. This is the voice of the revolution. Listen at your own risk. Greetings to you, and welcome to the Thunderbolt. And I hope you're ready, because this week we are going to enter the world of make-believe, where you can create any reality you wish simply by saying and buying that reality into being. Yes, people, in the world of make-believe, one can simply ignore facts and history and make up their own facts and history. And if one has enough money, power, and influence, they can impose their world of make-believe upon everyone else by making them believe as well. For instance, some corporate bigwig, I'm forgetting which one, but it doesn't really matter since most of them seem to be more or less interchangeable anyway these days. But this particular gentleman recently posed what he probably thought was a rhetorical challenge. He asked, quote, "Name one time that socialism has ever worked," unquote. The mere fact anyone can credibly ask such a question vividly demonstrates why people should study actual facts and actual history, or even actual current events. For the fact is that socialism has simply never been allowed to work, except here and there in a very limited fashion. At this very point in history, though, Canada and most of the European countries are not only being run by democratic socialists, but those same European countries, along with Canada, regularly dominate every poll taken for the best places in the world for common people to live. The United States? Not so much. At least these days. But had this corporate shill read some actual history, he might also have known that another place where socialism worked, at least for white people, was for a 30-year period right here in the good old United States. And it is truly ironic that Franklin D. Roosevelt, was so loathed by the elites of his era because Franklin Roosevelt almost single-handedly saved capitalism from itself and basically allowed it to continue. For you see, here's the thing. During the early 20th century, there was a large, powerful, and vocal left-wing political apparatus operating in the United States. And during the Great Depression, the possibility of an actual revolution against the Wall Street mobsters was not really all that much of a stretch. What Franklin Roosevelt did was to create a socialistic economic model that successfully contained the excesses of capitalism for over 30 years. Consider, before the Roosevelt era, the entire economic history of the United States had consisted of endless cycles of boom and bust and boom and bust. And to this day, in fact, the lone exception to that endless boom-bust cycle was the aforementioned 30-year period that lasted roughly between the mid-40s and the mid-70s. And during that entire time, there was steady economic growth with no booms, but also no busts. And most significantly, the wealth created by this economic growth was shared more or less fairly with the white working class. Yes, there was a lot of behind-the-scenes imperialism going on. And yes, women and people of color were systematically excluded from this economic miracle. But still, it more or less worked. And had they included women and people of color, it almost certainly would have worked even better. Yes, people, between the years 1945 and 1975, there were no economic collapses, and not one single bank collapsed or went bust. And as mentioned, this is utterly unprecedented in American history. And what was the model for this success? Well, that kind of speculation is always arguable, but I will posit that one reason was that there were strong and powerful labor unions assuring a strong voice for at least the white working class. I will also mention that the banks operated within the confines of regulatory straitjackets that prevented them from taking undue risks with other people's money. And finally, I will allude to the fact that during that period of American history, all personal income over the modern equivalent of a few million dollars was taxed at a rate of over 95%. Rich people were still rich. They just weren't as rich as they could have been, or as rich as they wanted to be, or as rich as they thought that they should be. But they were still far richer than anyone ever really needs to be. And how rich they were, or how rich they were not, was not the point anyway. Working people had successfully stood up to them. And that was a precedent that they absolutely could not allow to stand. The power of the working class needed to be eliminated. Well, they could do that. Enter Ronald Reagan. These days, it would be nearly impossible to do almost any of the things that the New Deal accomplished. For one thing, the American left has been destroyed. These days, sold-out, warmongering corporate shills such as Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein represent the left. Right. Anyway, Franklin D. Roosevelt pushed through four programs that were unlike anything the American government,
I'm putting you in command of the spaceship,
had ever tried before. And all four of those programs had profound effects upon American life. The first was the Social Security system. This was to assure that senior citizens did not wind up living in alleys and or surviving on dog food. The second program was unemployment compensation to assure that losing a job would not destroy a worker's whole life. And the third was the Minimum Wage Act to assure that people were paid a livable wage for their work. And fourth, Roosevelt created a jobs program and hired millions of unemployed Americans. Those people built many of our modern national parks. They did some of the first conservation work. This country is also full of ornate, beautiful post offices that were built by government employees working under these programs. Artists of all kinds were also hired by the government to bring art to working people. And all of this was paid for by taxing the shite out of rich people, and by taxing the shite out of rich corporations. And the thing is that Franklin D. Roosevelt was himself a member in good standing of the uber wealthy elites. After pushing his policies through, though, Roosevelt became utterly reviled by his fellow elites.
I'm putting you in command of the spaceship.
And this in spite of the fact that it is very likely that Franklin D. Roosevelt saved their asses from an outright revolution. And the only reason Roosevelt got away with doing all the things that he did was because Roosevelt was receiving constant and serious pressure from the communists, the socialists, and the labor unions. The elites knew this full well. And thus, as soon as Roosevelt was dead, they immediately launched into their full-scale war on all communists, socialists, and labor unions. And they pretty much won that fight a long time ago.
What was that?
Danger, Will Robinson.
Immediately after the end of World War II, the propaganda machine's astonishing ability to manipulate the hearts and minds of the American public was on full display when a large body of people were almost overnight transformed from respected civic leaders and decorated war heroes into the greatest threat that the United States has ever had to face. And of course, I refer to the communists, the socialists, and many of the most active leaders in the American labor movement. Communism became the ultimate evil of all time. And anyone that had even slightly flirted with even socialism, much less communism, at any time in their past life was subject to having their entire professional careers ruined. The first step in destroying the left was identifying and targeting what they considered to be the weakest link in this coalition, the American Communist Party. And after tasking their propaganda machine with a massive nationwide campaign demonizing the communists, almost overnight, they were transformed from heroes.
Tomorrow or just the end of time.
That had spearheaded revolutionary advances in labor law and battlers who had stood in the front lines in the fight against fascism. But their propaganda had converted them from that into agents of a hostile foreign power. So, gee, does that sound familiar? This anti-communism trope was also aimed at the Soviet Union. But keep in mind that the Cold War was almost equally meant to discredit the left in the United States as well. And indeed, one aspect of the Cold War was that it was used as a pretext for a full-on purge of anyone in public life that had ever stood up for working people and or anyone who had ever challenged the oligarchs in any manner. And thus, so quickly that it seems astonishing now, the communists were transformed from respected people who had won more concessions and rights for the working class people than any other American organization or political party ever had. And they returned from that into evil agents of foreign oppression. Gee, does that sound familiar? Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin and his infamous House Un-American Activities Committee, appropriately named since this committee itself committed some of the most un-American activities in American history, and McCarthy's Un-American Committee set about ruining the lives of thousands of people who were guilty of nothing more than harboring unpopular political beliefs and or questioning the status quo. And it was during this period that the so-called left in the United States began transforming into a bunch of right-wing warmongers. And it was during this period that the right in the United States started transforming into simple nutcases. And after the communists were destroyed, they took down a couple of socialist parties that existed at that time. I'm forgetting what their names were right now. But they did this using the argument that socialism was merely communism under a different name. Gee, does that sound familiar? And then after that, they targeted the labor unions. And again, they enjoyed almost complete success. In 1945, fully one-third of American workers were protected by labor unions. These days, that number stands at under 10%. This communist witch hunt traumatized the country to the point wherein no one dared to call what was happening what it was. Which was the whole point. The schools taught absolutely nothing about communist theory or the actual history, and neither did the corporate media. Yes, you had to go out of your way to learn about such things, and you did so at your own risk. And this purge had almost nothing to do with communism or with any ideology whatsoever. The purpose of this purge was to utterly destroy a political coalition that had successfully stood up to the 0.1%. As far as the oligarchs are concerned, that is the original sin. That is why Fidel Castro has always been so demonized, even though Fidel Castro is a freaking Boy Scout compared to a lot of other dictators that I could name. And that is why media coverage of Nicolas Maduro consists of a non-stop barrage of pure bullshit straight from the CIA's butt. The machine will not tolerate any model or social structure if that structure does not involve elites and elitist lackeys benefiting wildly while everyone else works themselves to death for some token pittance in order to keep those elites elite. That is especially true if that competing model actually works. After the media barrage had prepared the bed, the next step was a landslide of anti-left legislation. The first came in 1947 when Congress passed the Taft-Hartley Act, which basically represented further demonization of the communists and the socialists, and which gutted the labor unions. One of the clauses contained within Taft-Hartley It's the strict requirement that all workers must enjoy the benefits of union-negotiated contracts, whether or not those workers ever actually paid any union dues. Therefore, the concessions won by union members after paying years of dues, and after foregoing pay, and after freezing the backsides on picket lines, and after literally risking life and limb, those hard-bought benefits were also extended to the people who had not paid any price nor sacrificed anything whatsoever. And in some cases, these extended benefits even went to scabs who had crossed picket lines opposing the strikes that led to those extended benefits. The minimum wage did not keep up with inflation, and therefore, soon thereafter became meaningless. The programs for government-provided jobs for the unemployed largely ended, even though the original program was wildly successful, and even after millions of Americans lost their jobs and their homes during the 2007 economic collapse. Did you hear even a single national leader even suggest a government jobs program? Such ideas have now become blasphemy, and they have become blasphemous largely because such programs work so well. And I have a lot more to say about all this, but it's time to take a quick station break, so I'll be back in just a minute. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of anyone else associated with this radio station. You are listening to the Thunderbolt on Free Radio Olympia 91.9 FM, where we are proud to announce that we will be airing the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth every single week. All right, we are back. Now, the fact is that governments are the only institutions we have that are powerful enough to protect us common folk from rapacious oligarchs. The Magna Carta represented an early attempt by so-called middle-class people to mitigate oligarchical power. And ever since the signing of the Magna Carta, there has been a non-stop battle for control of the power that governments represent. And at this point in the United States, the oligarchs have now seized control of nearly everything. And if anyone dares speak government intervention into much of anything these days, then they generally get nowhere. The media ignores them, and colleagues mockingly jeer at them. The only people who do get anywhere, and the only people who do receive positive media coverage these days, are those who can outdo everyone else in celebrating the status quo, and or by demonizing anyone that speaks any ill against that status quo. And so, after destroying the communists and the socialists, their next target was the schools. And there was a massive purge of any and all teachers who had ever so much as ever stolen a kiss from a socialist. These teachers were labeled as dupes. They were called agents. Gee, does that sound familiar? The effect was that people became afraid to apply any critical analysis of any kind to anything that the elites were doing. And that was the point. If you never criticized capitalism in school, then you never learned to think about capitalism critically. You will just blindly accept it, whilst remaining completely unaware of the fact that there might be a better way of doing things. Also very high on their hit list was the media. All major movie production companies were purged of anyone who was politically to the left of Joseph McCarthy. This purge was conducted with the enthusiastic support of the studio owners. This purge included writers, producers, actors, and artists. Hollywood stopped producing movies with working class people as the heroes. And all of these actions not only worked, but they worked beautifully. In the 1930s, it was the robber barons who were blamed for the Great Depression. They were the ones that swindled and scammed and broke laws, and it was the oligarchs who were vilified and demonized by the general public. And a whole bunch of those oligarchs went to jail. During the 2007 recession, on the other hand, the only people blaming the true perpetrators were Occupy Wall Street and other so-called fringe far-left organizations. In the corporate media, blame was mostly laid upon irresponsible homebuyers, welfare mothers, and school teachers. Right. They have all the economic power.
The mountain is high, the valley is low,
and they control the economy. They call all the political and economic shots. As a result of their never-ceasing pervasive and systemic propaganda campaign, since the end of World War II, the oligarchs have managed to transform their image from loathed and hated exploiters into admired and respected captains of industry. They have managed this, even though they are exponentially more exploitative than they have ever been before. It may be too late now, but it may not be as well. We need to open people's eyes to what is actually happening here, because that is a prerequisite to radically redefining everyone's role in all of this. We need to engage in some seriously critical debate about our society and about our economic system. Seems that these days, the only people getting a free ride are the only people who don't need one. So I have time for one more Thunderbolt before we unveil this week's music selections. And in considering the never-ending torrent of truly alarming developments that require our urgent attention, I've decided that for this last piece, we all need a break, and so screw all that. Instead, I'm going to tell you all about the headless bees of Sleepy Hollow. Well, you see, it turns out that bees have a drinking problem.
Oh, yeah, sales on your macaron. Yeah, macaron. No,
yeah, it turns out
chacaron, chacaron,
that when chacaron, the bees' chacaron, surrounding environment is subjected to rainfall and high humidity levels, the nectar that the bees collect can take on moisture and the sugar content that normally prevents fermentation becomes diluted to the point where the yeasts in the pollen can start doing their yeasty thing. And the bee can then become as drunk as a skunk. However, drunk bees are just as problematic in the hive as they are on our highways. Well, never fear. It turns out that bees always have the equivalent of bouncers stationed at the entrance to their hives. And these bouncers are no joke. They have huge legs and tiny heads. They live in a vicious world where marauding robber bees are constantly trying to plunder their hive to steal their food. These bouncer bees are there to repel all invaders, and dealing with drunks is a very small part of their job, actually. Even if the punishment for drunkenness is death. But the central job of these bouncer bees is usually gruesome and deadly. So the drunks are no thing. But there is one species of marauder bee, for instance, where the bouncer bee will bite the intruder's wing, whereupon the intruder turns around and bites off the bouncer bee's head. However, the head remains attached to the marauder bee's wing, meaning that the intruder can no longer fly. Meaning that the intruder is not nearly as dangerous now as it otherwise would be. It is not at all unusual to see a marauder bee with two or three decapitated heads attached to its wings, and thus these bouncer bees continue protecting their hives even after death. Anyway, after confronting such intruders as this, then dealing with drunks is almost an afterthought. Anyway, while I would never suggest the death penalty for any human for anything ever, much less simple drunkenness. I would that our own alcohol addicts were that easy to deal with. Anyway, it's time to get to work. That's it for the news and commentary section this week. For the cultural section, a friend of mine recently gave me a Tracy Chapman CD, which I greatly appreciated since I haven't even thought about Tracy Chapman for several years now, though I did warn her that she was likely to be hearing Tracy on a Thunderbolt sometime soon. So don't say I didn't warn you. This is Tracy Chapman. Enjoy.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's theirs? Don't you know you better run, run, run. But a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. And finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Oh, no, talking about a revolution. Talking about a revolution. To anywhere, maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. You got a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs and finally see what it means to be living. See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says, body's too old for working. His body's too young to look like his. My mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said, somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school, and that's what I did.
got a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? We gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. We go cruise and entertain ourselves. Still ain't got a job. Now work in the market as a checkout girl. I know things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter, buy a bigger house and live in the suburb. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all our bills. Still drinking late at the bar. See more your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. So take your fast car and keep on driving. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so you can fly away? You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.
I'll be working for somebody else until I'm in my grave. I'll be dreaming of a life of ease and mountains, oh, mountains of thanks. Have a big expensive car, drag my furs on the ground. Have a maid I can tell to bring me anything. Everyone will look at me with envy and with greed. Now revel in their attention. And mountains, oh mountains of thanks. Sweet lazy life, champagne and caviar. Hope you come and find me, 'cause you know who we are. Those who deserve the best in life know what our money's worth. Whose sole misfortune is having mountains on nothing at birth. Oh, they tell me it's still time to save my soul. They tell me renounce all, renounce all those material things you gain by exploiting.
your blood will make you queen. Won't die lonely, have it all prearranged. A grave that's deep and wide enough for me and all my mountains. Oh, thanks. Oh, they tell me still the time to save my soul. They tell me all those material things you gain by exploiting other human beings. Mostly I feel lonely. It's gonna take all my mountains of thanks to surround me. Keep all my enemies away. Keep my sadness and loneliness at bay. I'll be working for somebody else until I'm in my grave. I'll be dreaming of a life of ease and mountains, oh, mountains of thanks.
Mountains of Things. Before that, we had Fast Car. We started off that set with Talking About a Revolution. All those from Tracy Chapman from back in the day. So all the radio stations are in fund drive mode, and they need funds to keep putting on shows like this and all the other radical political information you need to get through this world. So consider that. And in addition, please keep in mind that the views expressed on the Thunderbolt are those of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station or anyone associated with this radio station. The Thunderbolt website is dana98501.wordpress.com. 98501 is the downtown Olympia zip code, if that helps you remember that. And you can contribute to the Thunderbolt cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. Glad you joined us this week. We hope to see you next week. And in the meanwhile,
thank you very much.